Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Paul Rabel. Paul, I'm pretty sure this is the first time, maybe ever, that I've sat across a podcast host. This is intimidating.
For you?
Yes.
I'm intimidated.
Well, I'm really excited because, you know, you and I have gotten to know each other over the course of more than a decade, and this is a podcast that has, you know, a really unique opportunity to delve into what I would argue is one of the biggest stories in the history of lacrosse, the formation of the Premier Lacrosse League.
Yeah.
And you are part of a group spearheading this effort, and I'm sure most of our listeners at this point have an inkling of what PLL is. But let me start by asking that question directly. What is PLL?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you hosting me. It's always nice to be back at ILHQ. Having spent the majority of my career here now, I've been playing for 20 years and professionally for 10. So I like to reflect often and remind myself that now the bulk of my playing days have been professionally. And so to kind of get to your question, the Premier Lacrosse League is a new pro league that we're building with the best players in the world that will comprise six of the top teams by virtue of that talent in the world competing for a championship on a regular season basis. And our goal is to distribute this game everywhere. That means broadcast television through new media, which is social media, digital media, to break it down through sports analysis, how team sports fans are used to digesting content while also delivering the narratives of our athletes, who we think are some of the most dynamic athletes on field and some of the most interesting and exciting personalities off of it. So those are the kind of the two tenets. And then the third is really unique, and it's our business model. So we took a lot of time drawing and analyzing not only other team sports leagues, but newer sports and individual-based tour leagues to try and figure out how to problem solve for decades of what the lacrosse audience and a lot of players think has been an insufficient product. And that can be, you know, pointed to a decline in attendance, to the way the game has been distributed across television or lack thereof. And so for us, we wanted to try and strip the emotion and be really objective and say, hey, with a growing game, with an audience size of 6 million, with player participation numbers at 2 million, how do we support that group and how do we get our game in front of other sports fans, introducing it and try to, you know, take a larger market share of the professional sports audience? And we came to a solution given the recent growth in MLS and specifically the venue development, is that by going tour-based, we can adopt premium venues in major market cities where the game is growing and bring all the best players in the world into one market at a time while still maintaining the integrity of a team sports competition where every game matters over the course of regular season. We have an all-star break where the best players in the world throughout that regular season are rewarded to play. And then we have playoffs and championship because every game has to matter in a major professional team sports league. And then what we're able to capitalize on while creating a better model is getting the game in front of more lacrosse fans everywhere. So being in 12 major market cities versus fewer, while maintaining that core product, we felt like we landed on a place that we can continue to develop and appropriately commercialize the professional lacrosse game to our audience that's budding and sports fans everywhere. And the last comment I'll make is that, you know, this is the model that makes the most sense right now. It doesn't mean that in the future, as we hit certain milestones and grow, that we go back to a city-based model, because that works. It works for the Big Four. But for a growing sport like lacrosse, and you look at examples in other niche team sports that don't own venues, that don't quite have the mass adoption in markets across the country, that it actually doesn't make sense for the time being. But we hope that as we grow this thing, that it will, and then there's that outcome down the road.
So there are two things that you said that come back to the question of how did you go about this? The first thing you said was we. You're not, you know, you're the public face of this effort, but you're part of a team that's driving this effort.
Yep.
And then the second is you just laid out a full-scale analysis
that
was executed. So the question is, how did this process unfold?
Yeah. So I say we, and first my co-founders, my older brother and business partner, Mike Rabel. He's a serial entrepreneur and investor based in Silicon Valley, but we both grew up in the suburbs of Maryland. And we both, at one stage, when I had graduated from Johns Hopkins, you and I were talking about it before we hit record, had a job in commercial real estate as an analyst for the financial markets, capital markets. And I lived at home in my parents' basement. I was drafted to the Boston Cannons. I finished that season. My brother lived upstairs, and he was in real estate as well as he was starting his entrepreneur career and doing that on the side late at nights and into the weekends. We would hop in a car together, take the HOV lane down 270 and around the Beltway. We worked at competing real estate firms. He was at JLL, and I was at Cassidy and Pinkert across the street on 21st and L from each other. We lived that world for a little bit. I ducked out first after a short 9-month stint. I got an endorsement that gave me a little bit of runway there so that I could then start a capital or a camping clinic business. I moved out of my parents' house, lived in Baltimore, became a quote unquote full-time professional lacrosse player, but was essentially an entrepreneur that that played lacrosse on weekends. But I got the opportunity to make my own schedule. So I was training during the days and really doubling down on my output as an athlete, which led to my career continuing to grow on field in both MLL and NLL. And then Mike left real estate and doubled down on his entrepreneurial career. So he's been in New York, then to Silicon Valley. He started a number of companies. The latest one, he was running revenue for a major financial technology company called Funding Circle. It just went public. And him and I got together, as we do with a lot of our projects, and began brainstorming on first why we think lacrosse has potential, and then what would an execution strategy look like if we were to make a move in that space. So the why is, I've already talked about participation, but when we talk about timing as investors, you often ask yourself, you know, why not 2 years ago? Why not 2 years from now? And what we've seen, whether it's the rise of esports or Drone Race League or World Surf League or PBR, UFC over the last decade, is because of new media, and I qualified that earlier as social media and the rise of digital and how, you know, mobile smartphones are ubiquitous, is that we've seen this convergence of new media and new technology, which has given athletes the opportunity to become influencers, which has given niche team sports leagues the opportunity to connect with an audience. Both of those aforementioned were essentially captive to linear media prior to the advent of Facebook, then Instagram and Twitter, then YouTube, et cetera. And so what linear media is television, radio, print. Those were the big three that covered all of sports. And if you didn't move the needle as a sport, they wouldn't cover you. And in lacrosse specifically, when I grew up in the 90s, my only touch point to lacrosse was the Final Four. Got to watch it every weekend on the ESPN family of networks. Or sorry, not every weekend. Once a year. Yes. One weekend. And I would record it, and then I would watch it every weekend as a young kid. But it wasn't till we've seen national networks begin to spit out sub sports platforms, whether it's NBC Sports Network or ESPNU or college or CBS Sports Network. Then we saw college lacrosse get more coverage on television. So we've seen the linear growth happen. But when we talk about conversation in sport across, whether it's SportsCenter or the New York Times, they're really focused on the NBA, the NFL, MLB, NHL, and now MLS. So at this, you know, kind of at this turn of new social media, of new media and new technology, me specifically had the first opportunity to crack that code by launching a Facebook fan page in 2009 and then adopting a YouTube channel, early adopting Instagram and Twitter. So I felt it personally that we could communicate with an audience, and this touch point was new and could lead to something special for our sport. And again, personally, I was able to get an endorsement with a company like Red Bull that was never involved in lacrosse prior to social media. And I wouldn't have had that connection if it wasn't for new media. So we started learning more and more. I did personally about the positioning of our sport and why I thought there was more upside. And part two of it was like, okay, we believe that if we create a new business model, which we've discussed, we look at modern trends in media and technology, there's a real appetite for lacrosse. Let's all not forget, and everyone who listens to this knows, that it's the oldest team sport in North America. It's a game that was founded and created by the Native Americans and the creator. Yet over time, it's become kind of this Northeast private school sport.
Reputationally.
And still, though, its adoption across North America has been slower than what you would think as the oldest sport ever. So we then said, okay, we believe there's execution here. So then you have to take the step of, let's have conversations. So Mike and I, first, and our goal on the outset was to work with the existing leagues. And we think the NLL does a really good job right now. And our focus was on field lacrosse. It's the game that I grew up playing, and Mike played it as well. So we did know, and we've structured our deal such that we can work with NLL by eliminating a scheduling overlap right out of the gates, and we're working on other joint opportunities. So our focus was primarily with Major League Lacrosse and how could we help, and our goal was to always work with them rather than start something new. And we spent a lot of time in 2017 and even into 2018 in trying to figure something out. And it kind of the long and short of it is, it's just hard for any kind of venture deal or any kind of league of this size to figure out a meaningful shift, both economically and from a logistical and operating sense. And so we weren't able to do it. But it was always our goal to figure out a way to work, acquire, or partner with MLL, but know and feel so passionately that the game can and should take meaningful steps to building commercial viability at the professional level. The trickle-down effect that will have on the rest of the industry, we think, will be huge. And like, the time is now. So where a lot of entrepreneurs may veer off and say we can't get a deal done, then we'll either move on or we'll wait. We just feel like timing is of essence, and as hard as it is to go the route of, okay, let's start new league, just feel again that this is the makeup of who I am and the makeup of my brother, and being mission-based and really trying to solve for something that we think is there.
Today, we are going to be talking about my favorite childhood animated movie. Today, we are going to be talking about Robinhood, a new investing app that lets you sell and buy stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. It's a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. And the simple and intuitive, clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way helps those newcomers access it even more easily. I'm just getting started, but I gotta believe there are very few podcasts for which Robinhood appearing would be more appropriate than this podcast, where we're talking to Paul Rabel about the formation of the Premier Lacrosse League. Not only is the conversation so much about the investment that has been made in the league, but I gotta believe that pretty much every player who has played college lacrosse in the last 20 years is listening to this podcast, interested in learning more about why and how this came to be and what Paul's thought process is. And I can't imagine a group of prospective Robinhood users better than that. The value of the Robinhood app comes down to the fact that there is no cost and no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood does not charge a commission. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Like I said, the design is easy to use, and that helps the learn by doing aspect. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized newsfeed. Receive custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right time to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at lacrosse.robinhood.com. That's lacrosse.robinhood.com.
You mentioned that it's hard, and you know, I'm aware of some of the toll that it's taken on you. So I guess my question is, has this process been daunting?
For sure, from every step of the way. And I'd say first off, you know, the relationships are the most important piece of this. And there are relationships that we have forged, both you and I, across leagues, across the players, even into the collegiate ranks of coaches and high schools and club operators and such. And so, you know, everyone to a certain degree of separation has a touch point to professional lacrosse and its athletes. So for us on the outset, it was, you know, making sure that the people that can drive this sport forward were either aware or involved, or we were actively soliciting feedback from, and that takes a lot of time. The second piece that has been the most time consuming but the most critical piece to vitality for this is the players. And for us, you know, looking at a league that's built by the players, where the players are owners, they're being compensated on a much greater rate than what professional lacrosse has ever comped a player to play. And then they're also being given access to healthcare, which is a problem that I faced early on when I was first a full-time player, and it's a problem that the current crop of rookies are trying to hash out. And then even veterans that have played arguably more meaningful roles than anyone in this game by pushing it forward, like Kyle Harrison.
Well, and the Canadian national team.
Exactly, yeah. So, and the Canadian players are some of the best players in the world, both indoor and outdoor. So having to solve for that from a compensation structure standpoint, and then make sure that we were entirely inclusive and impartial. We needed to basically open this up to everyone, and that required individual conversations 10, 15, 20 times over with, you know, a group of 150 to 200 guys, and we think it'll probably be 300. Like, our core ethos when building this company, when we look at every vertical, and when you build a major professional sports league, you have your media and your broadcasts and your content strategies. That's one. You have your sponsorships, your corporate partnership strategy. That's two. You have your product and your ticket, or what you call a gate. That's three. That's pretty important, right? Getting people to the game and having a great experience for those people. Then you have your merchandise strategy. Then you have your youth activation strategy. So those are pretty much five businesses that deserve the tender love and care, each of them on their own. And you're managing all of them under one roof and creating the different business units so they can execute. So to have those conversations with all those players and to what we think is be a completely open book, so that they can not only understand what we're doing, believe in what we're doing, but then participate via feedback and in some cases actually take on operating roles. That has been the most time consuming. It's also been the most rewarding. And it's something that we continue to remind ourselves as like our being player centric, that the success of this will rest on the shoulders of the players.
So you've talked about the players and you've talked about the role that they play in the strategy. You've talked about the diversity of the strategy. One of the other things that's interesting about this is the tour-based model. Mm. So, you know, from an event and facilities standpoint, what can you tell us? What can you share?
Yeah. So we looked at the tour-based model as being able to solve for a smaller yet growing population of lacrosse fans and players, to be able to reach all of them to our best ability without kind of alienating a large portion of American cities by only being in a select few. You know, one of my close friends is the head of sports at Instagram, and he's a avid Ultimate Frisbee player. And he says the same thing to the governing bodies at Ultimate Frisbee as he did to us, which is tour-based now makes you a national sport. So fans everywhere, whether it's their connectivity to players or our head coaches or the culture of the team that we create marks and names around, they get to choose who they support, and they don't have to have a team in the Bay Area of California or up in Chicago or down in Florida to feel like the allegiance is consummated. So we really like the model for an emerging sport like lacrosse for the fans. From a player standpoint, what we get to solve for in a true single entity, which means kind of governed by one body, each of these teams, is we can create consistency for the player experience. So I mentioned the venue problem earlier and not being able to own venues, and that dictates your schedule. It dictates your ability to be on national television. It dictates, you know, your travel for your players. To be able to solve for that by going tour-based, and we're targeting MLS venues and have secured several and really premium sports sites where pro leagues play, that creates a consistent experience for the players to get access to all of that. And it's not too dissimilar from the Final Four, where you have eight teams across three divisions coming in and playing for a championship. You get to play at a premium site. We can also solve using consistencies across teams for travel and for stay at hotels. And so even in the NFL and the NBA, depending on which team you're on, will dictate your experience as a pro player. So by a tour base, whether you're NASCAR or PGA Tour or UFC, that's synthesized. And so that's important for an emerging sport for our players to have a great experience. So we'll be able to solve for that. And then on the network side, making sure that, you know, this game is in front of as many people as possible. We think television helps validate our sport. There's a lot of conversation around OTT, and we're not neglecting the value of creating a really bespoke product for a rabid audience like lacrosse. But lacrosse has missed at a professional level the validation component. And being with a network partner like NBC gives us that instantaneously through the production quality, through the announcers, through the music we're used to hearing in the NBC jingle and the alignment with their other properties, whether it's the English Premier League, NASCAR, the Tour de France, that helps our sport elevate itself overnight. And from there, you know, when you look at the ability to get a programming partner, you need to fit within their scheduling availability. You need to be able to create a great experience and have access to, in our business, what you call fiber connectivity, which is essentially technology that allows a broadcast to go out into screens all over the country and have multiple camera angles and be able to pull angles from player helmets and, you know, call on audio clips from coaches on the sideline. That type of connectivity needs to be there. And that has a lot to do with the stadium. So when we looked at all these things we wanted to do and building something from scratch, we were able to say, like, these are the core principles that professional lacrosse needs and create from there. The last thing I'll say about our tour-based model, kind of rounding back to the first point, is that we're going to be in 12 major market cities. We're going to two major market cities twice. For the All-Star Game, we're double-clicking on the PLL Championship. And so we ran a really deep analysis to come up with those cities. And look, the reality, Terry, is like you and I could sit down and write down who we think the top 15 markets are in lacrosse. We'd probably come up to where we landed, but we want to be really data-based when we come up with our solutions for professional lacrosse. So we looked at micro and certainly macro data around sport participation numbers in certain markets, whether that's U.S. lacrosse participants or growth in club teams or rec lacrosse presence. We were given through our investors access to Nielsen data, where we could see average household viewership in specific cities when college lacrosse was on television. Those were big data points for us. And then we looked at available stadiums. We looked at general fandom for sports in specific markets. A couple always jump out in Denver and even Portland, Seattle, and Chicago. They're rabid sports fans, cities that get behind not only their teams, but Spartan Race coming into market, UFC coming into market, like different tour-based models that also come in, they get behind. So those were the data points that we were pulling, and we landed on these 12 markets that we're excited to release.
So we've talked about the player. You know, at this point, fans have an opportunity to see a list of the players that are, you know, likely to be involved. Obviously, you've mentioned the opportunity to continue to work with NBC and the markets that you want to play in. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of like progress to have made to have gotten to this point. What are some of the other, you know, either challenges or the next boxes you want to check?
Yeah, so it's great. So I would say, like, I'll talk one quickly about a challenge. So it's for me personally. So I'm going to play, and that was always that was always something I was keen on. I feel like I have a lot left in me in my career, a lot left to give, and I care a lot about playing. So a challenge, and you said earlier you've noticed a toll on me. Hopefully not as much physically as more just mentally, but you know, I have to figure out the workload for building this thing is endless, and you know, entrepreneurs all share this. It's different than maybe a more regimented work stream. Is that you're never done. You have to decide just when to stop for the day and when to pick up the next day. And so that can permeate its way, especially into my training regimen and workouts. So my calendar has gotten pretty psychotic, and it's color coded and it's jammed every day. And I try to create a holy grail around my workouts and my rehab. But there are certain things, especially at this stage, where this will supersede it in many cases, especially during the build phase of what we're doing now. So I thought that was worth mentioning on the challenge side. When we talk about what's left to release, I mean, we have partnerships we're working on. So, you know, look, the elephant in the room is Major League Lacrosse. And right now, as I mentioned, kind of the formation of our strategy, starting and trying to figure out with them what to do, we're focused entirely and spending all of our energy on PLL. We realize that there are going to be a lot of questions, and still are, into what 2019's summer season looks like for professional lacrosse. And while there may be fragmentation in the short term, we think that we're looking to solve for the long term and the broader health of professional outdoor lacrosse. And so in addition to solving for that, we're building partnerships with important groups in our sport. I had mentioned the National Lacrosse League. I haven't mentioned U.S. Lacrosse and even the WPLL. So figuring out ways to work with the Women's Professional Lacrosse League, the governing body in the U.S., and what that would entail is helping with a lot of the charitable initiatives and the nonprofit side of USL, and even the youth development programs, and providing amplification through the top players in the world and real strategy and kind of grit on the ground and figuring it out. So partnerships. In addition to players are our head coaches and each team's makeup of coaches, even down to equipment managers. When I think about sports as a player and as a consumer, the coach is so seminal to a team's success. They are a figurehead. They are a binder of chemistry. They set the workout regimens, the practice schedules, and they dictate the in-game tempo and the alterations that they make during a game. We also know that in many sports, head coaches are some of the largest brands, whether it's Coach K or Nick Saban in college basketball and football, or it's Bill Belichick and Greg Popovich in the NFL and the NBA. So we're going to get behind our head coaches, and we're going to have some prominent figures that are leading this team, these teams, so that we see the ultimate level of competition on field, but also realize the culture that we're building at the Premier Lacrosse League. So our coaches will be a part of it. And then we're going to do it to announce our venues and, you know, how fans can attend and purchase tickets and, you know, which cities we're in and what the activation on lead up is going to be. And all that stuff is really exciting. It is a pretty significant shift in what we're used to digesting, at least at the professional lacrosse level. But it's our job as operators and as players to continue to deliver a message and create a narrative around first, this being a league, and that these teams are competing week in and week out for a championship. And then second is for the greater good of the game and the fans, is how the product is being delivered on screen, in person, and we'll move from there. So a ton of announcements forthcoming, but we're just, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, and this is the first part.
there's no question that we're going to have to do this again because, you know, how are the players being put into teams? What are they going to wear?
Yeah.
You know, what are the other lacrosse components going to be relative to the entire weekend? You know, one of the things that I'm really passionate around regarding this idea is the ability to create content away from the games. So whether it's, you know, players coaching at clinics over the course of the weekend or just their social interaction. Like, I think, you know, that's something that I think is really valuable and an opportunity that this has. When you get, you know, 120, 140 of the best players in the world together 12 times a year, 14 times a year in the same place, like, it's a really special content opportunity. But you mentioned how busy you are, and I want to be respectful of your time. So I want to end with this.
Yep.
Despite the fact that it is daunting when you lay out the arc of your professional career and the intersection with your passion for the game, I want to give you an opportunity to get a little nostalgic. And the question is this a dream job? Is founding PLL the culmination or the next step in your development as a professional in such a way that, you know, you find a tremendous amount of redeeming emotion?
Yeah, I appreciate that, and the framing is interesting. It does get me a bit nostalgic. I'll say that my goal was to never start a new professional lacrosse league. You and I keep coming back to challenges and how time consuming it is, but frankly, like, we have great people in this sport who have invested meaningful capital. My dream job, I'm living it and have been for a long time. I've had to, make concessions in areas that other professional athletes in other major sports don't. I've had to work really hard off the field and develop professional acumen, and especially in business and entrepreneurship, to support low wages. And for me, when we launch and get out of this thing and really build a professional property that people get excited about and, you know, think can impact the greater good of the industry in a really significant way, what I would get especially when I think about my rise as a lacrosse player, the goal was always to play at the highest level in college lacrosse. And what's interesting about that, and I think that's the shared sentiment today. And what's interesting about that is, like, we're not competing against college lacrosse. We love college lacrosse. And many football fans, avid, diehard football fans, would say that they favor the SEC over the NFL or the ACC basketball over the NBA. But there's a conversation. And for the athlete, which is the most important thing, the athlete that's playing, as you know, when I started, when I was 12, getting their stick for the first time, to be able to have an after college opportunity to play at a high level and to develop meaningful income and to be a professional athlete in our sport, creating that opportunity is something that I would consider a dream. And that's really what we're doing. And we've taken meaningful steps overnight to build that now. And then as we continue to take strides in the future, we think the opportunity will only grow and grow. But for this, you know, 12 or 13 year old that's listening to this podcast now and wants to play hopefully at Johns Hopkins, but you know, whichever college or university that they want to attend and play at a high level, that they also want to graduate and be drafted into the PLL and know that they don't have to support a part-time low wage with another job. And that shift, I think, will happen now and hopefully will continue to grow such that the Alabama top recruited football players, they play and they compete their asses off to win an SEC championship and a national championship. But on the cover letter of Nick Saban's recruiting docs that he sends out to the next high school player is often the number of NFL players and their signing bonuses in the preceding year. And so as important as Alabama football is, so is it important that the sacrifices these young athletes make, that they can benefit and reap the rewards professionally. And that's what we're solving for, and that's what gives us the most energy.
Well, Paul, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations on the announcement of the Premier Lacrosse League, and we look forward to having that next conversation where we can dive into even more of the specifics.
Thanks.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.